I was dying to ask Farajad about the nuclear waste, but was reluctant to broach this topic with Saman listening. So I drew my own copy of the proof on the cousin's ship and began working on it. Before long, I got bogged down. Cord and Rosk started playing some music on the Fetch's sound system, softly at first, more loudly when no one objected. This had to be the first time Farajad had ever heard popular music. I cringed so hard I thought I'd get internal injuries, but the Thousander accepted it as calmly as he had the Dynaglibe Lubristrip. I gave up trying to work the proof and just looked out the window and listened to the music. In spite of all my prejudices against Extramuros culture, I kept being surprised by moments of beauty in these songs. Most of them were forgettable, but 1 in 10 sheltered some turn or inflection that proved that the person who had made it had achieved some kind of upsight, had, for a moment, got it. I wondered if this was a representative sampling, or if Cord was just unusually good at finding songs with beauty in them and loading only those onto her G-jaw. The music, the heat of the afternoon, the jouncing of the fetch, my lack of sleep, and shock at leaving the consent. With all of these affecting me at once, it was no wonder I couldn't work a proof. But as the day grew old and the sun came in more and more horizontally, as the dying towns and ruined irrigation systems came less and less frequently, and the landscape was purified into high desert, spattered with stony ruins, I started thinking that something else was working on me. I was used to Orlo being dead, not literally dead and buried, of course, but dead to me. That is what Anathem did, killed an avowed without damaging the body. Now, with only a few hours to get used to the idea, I was about to see Orlo again. At any moment, for all I knew, we might spy him hiking up one of these lonely crags to get ready for a night's observations. Or perhaps his emaciated corpse was waiting for us under a cairn, thrown up by slines descended from those who had eaten Saint Bly's liver. Either way, it was impossible for me to think of anything else when I might be confronted by such a thing at any moment. Cord's face was shining on me. She reached for a control and turned down the music, then repeated something. I had gone into a sort of trance, which I shattered by moving. "Furmon's on the G-jaw," she explained. "He wants to stop. P and Parley."
Both sounded good to me.
We pulled off at a wide place in the road along a curving grade, a third of the way into a descent that would, over the next half hour, take us into a flat-bottomed valley that connected to the horizon. This was no valley of the wet and verdant type, but a failure in the land where withered creeks went to die and flash floods spent their rage on a supine waste. Spires and palisades of brown basalt hurled shadows much longer than they were tall. Two solitary mountains rose up perhaps 20 or 30 miles away. We gathered around the Cartabla and convinced ourselves that those were two of the three candidates we had chosen earlier. As for the third, well, it appeared that we had just driven around it and were now scouring its lower slopes. Furmon wanted to talk to me in my capacity as leader. I shook off the last wisps of the near coma I had sunk into and drew myself up straight.
"I know you guys don't believe in God," he began, "but considering the way you live, well, I thought you might feel more at home staying with..."
"Bayesian monks?" I hazarded.
"Yes, exactly."
He was a little taken aback that I knew this. It was only a lucky guess. When Saman had mentioned earlier that Furmon was talking to a Bayesian installation, I had imagined a cathedral, or at any rate something opulent. That was before I'd seen the landscape. "A monastery," I said, "is on one of those mountains?"
"The closer of the two. You can see it about halfway up, on the northern flank."
With some hints from Furmon, I was able to see a break in the mountain slope, a sort of natural terrace sheltered under a crescent of dark green. Trees, I assumed.
"I've been there for retreats," Furmon remarked. "Used to send my kids there every summer."
The concept of a retreat didn't make sense to me until I realized that it was how I lived my entire life.